This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This has been a tough year for the many families in the town of Newton. Last night, parents, students, and school administrators gathered at Newton South High School to discuss teen suicide in their community. There have been three of them in this school year.
Yesterday on this program, we heard from Leela McCain of Newton. She's the mother of Karen Douglas, who took her life in October. And Leela offered some valuable guidance for young people wrestling with thoughts of suicide.
They have to realize that life isn't perfect, and that's the beauty of it. And it's okay to not have good days, you know, and it's perfectly normal to not be perfect.
But what causes an adolescent to turn a series of bad days into thoughts of suicide? Well, joining us now is Dr. Michael Rich. He's an associate professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School. He's also the director of the Center on Media and Child Health at Children's Hospital in Boston. And Michael Rich, welcome back to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Help us make sense of what goes on behind the depression, those bad days that Leela McCain mentions. What triggers teens to take such extreme measures?
Well, if we knew exactly what triggered them, we would be able to prevent it. It's usually a combination of things. But I think that, first of all, we have to understand that we can't bring sort of the concept of adult depression to adolescence. Mm-hmm. Normal adolescence is a time of great movement, of morphing of not just their body, but their minds and their spirits as they figure out who they are and who they want to be and how they want to live in the world. And their emotions are all over the place. The lability of the adolescent emotional state is akin to what would be pathology in any other age group. And this is part of how they are able to sort of break loose the tectonic plates of childhood and move toward an independent adulthood. When you combine that kind of emotional lability with an underdeveloped executive function part mm-hmm. of the brain, as they will not develop this until their mid to late 20s, they will not have that impulse control, that future thinking, that concept of what I do has lasting, often permanent results. Then I think that you've got a potentially volatile combination, and that's what often happens in this case. We're not seeing kids who've been depressed for years and years and years doing mm-hmm. this as much.
So what do you make of the idea of three suicides when people talk about a rash or a series of suicides? There was an expert in Newton yesterday who talked about suicidal tendencies aren't contagious. But what do you make? I mean, how do you make sense of what's going on in a community when you see a series of suicides like this?
I think it's important to emphasize that this is not contagious in the sense of it's something you can catch from mm-hmm. someone else for a couple of reasons. The first of which is that externalizes the process. That takes the individual out of the loop as if somehow they can catch suicidality. What it does do, though, is that it brings it to their attention. And in many ways, it makes it accessible or almost normalizes it so that it becomes on the plate of possibilities as they consider what to do about this current downturn in their mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last night in Newton was in part about looking for answers and a way forward. You know, if you had been there, what's your best advice? What would you have said to parents about this situation in Newton and how to think about this and how to think about their kids?
Well, I think, first of all, suicide is all about prevention. It's not something you can cure. So our role should be to focus on those kids who are alive now, love them, and most importantly, communicate with them mm-hmm. and leave the door open for communication. I think one error we make often is that because adolescents are working through their normal autonomy seeking and pushing away from parents, that we let them push us away. Hmm. We let them have their space and their privacy and kind of check out from being available to them. And as much as they complain about us being in their faces, it's important for us to hug them and care for them and let them know that it's safe to talk to them. I think it's also important at this stage for them to make independent connections with others. Every kid deserves at least one adult that's just crazy about them. And often that person is best not a parent, but someone else, a coach, a teacher, a guidance counselor. But they need to stay connected, and that's the single most protected thing they can do.
Yeah, it seemed like one of the messages I was hearing last night or reading about this morning from the meeting in Newton was stay connected, don't let kids worry alone. I mean, that sounds
absolutely
smart.
And I think one other thing is that kids seek to help each other. Mm. And oftentimes one, you know, the hubris of youth will often lead one to think that he or she can be a therapist and a counselor and a support to someone who's really struggling with stuff. And I think that kids need to be reminded that these are very volatile, potentially permanent, lasting damages that could be done if they end up on thin ice and not knowing what they can do.
Well, Dr. Rich, thank you so much for coming in. Important issue. Always value your expertise. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Michael Rich, he's an associate professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School, also the director of the Center on Media and Child Health at Children's Hospital in Boston.
For the first time in Olympic history, two women won gold medals today in the same downhill ski event in Sochi.
Tina Mays of Slovenia and Dominique Jazin of Switzerland both completed the steep fast course in just under 1 minute and 42 seconds.
The last time there was a tie in Olympic skiing was at the 1998 Games in Nagano. Two men won gold there in the Super G.
Joining us now to talk about the Olympics and the rest of the week in sports is Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. Hey, Bill.
Hello, Anthony.
So first of all, I want to talk to you about this amazing race between these two women tying an event like this. I love watching the downhill racers fly down the mountain 80 plus miles an hour. They're clocked within a hundredth of a second, and yet they tied.
Yeah, there are two stories that really strike me that kind of are peripheral to this. One is how happy both of them seem to be. Mm. They stood together on the top of the podium, and one of them said, well, we've been friends before, and now we'll be closer friends.
That's
because
a nice
this ties us together forever. The other thing is that there are three people in Sochi, as I understand it, who know who really won that race because the timers do go out more digits
than just hundredths
than
of a second.
But there's an agreement. It stops at hundredths of a second. It's hundredths of a second. If that's tied, it's tied. But there are three people there who know how many more digits it took to
probably
actually determine a winner.
The Swiss watchmaker, probably.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. So, and he ain't talking.
And Bill, I learned something about you today, which as I hadn't realized, assuming this is true, that you're very kind of taken with figure skating. And this is you look like you're nodding.
I'm taken with any athlete who makes something extraordinarily difficult look simple and easy and natural and graceful. And figure skating does it.
That's the truth.
And I don't follow figure skating except every 4 years when the Winter Olympics roll around. But then, yeah, it's fascinating and it's beautiful to watch.
And the Russians themselves are doing a really nice job in front of their hometown crowd.
The Russians are magnificent. Yeah. My problem is because I don't follow it very much, I don't see the mistakes that all those commentators, oh my God, there's a bobble. I didn't see the bobble. Looked great to me. Looked to me like they're all magnificent. And I just enjoy the magnificence and the incredible illusion that what they're doing is easy.
There are some New England figure skaters competing. Marissa Castelli and her partner Simon, I think it's pronounced Schnapier. They're both from Rhode Island. They placed ninth earlier in the week in the short program, fourth today in the long program. Canada came in first, by the way. Are you rooting for any favorites? Or are you equal opportunity?
No, I don't root. I just like to watch and enjoy. It's one of the beautiful things about the Olympics is it doesn't matter. You might go to the Olympics rooting for the athletes from your country, but what you learn is that brilliance and excellence is spread across the world.
Bill, I'm really happy to hear you talking so enthusiastically about the Olympics, and I want you to help me, okay? Because I've been watching a little bit this week, and I enjoy it, but the way it's covered, I find it so hard to take. You know, you see, for example, in the snowboarding, you see three contestants, three athletes, and then what feels like 5 minutes of commercials. And after 20 minutes, I just give up.
Yeah, the trick is to have your remote handy and have a movie that's very simple on the, you know, when you hit last on the remote,
it goes back to the movie.
It's got to be a movie that's simple to follow so you can miss fairly large chunks of it and still get back into it while the commercials are going on.
All right, I'll take that under advisement.
Bill, the Olympic men's hockey competition hasn't started yet, but the teams are made up of a lot of NHL stars, including a bunch of Bruins. Tell us who we should have our eye on there.
Yeah, five Bruins, a Krejci playing for the Czech Republic, Rask for Finland, Chara for Slovakia, Eriksson for Sweden, and Bergeron for Canada. So you have your choice. If you're
That's
a
great.
Bruins fan, you can root for any one of five teams at the Olympics.
Now, it's really interesting, this part of the story, because I understand that it's not certain that the NHL players will return for the next Olympics in South Korea. That's going to be up to the owners and the players. But do you think it's a good idea to have these NHL guys at the Olympics?
I think it's a good idea because I think the Olympics are about excellence. Aren't you going to want to have the best at what they do, no matter what the sport is? Of course, the concern for the executives involved, the owners and the league executives, is they don't like the break in the National Hockey League season every 4 years. They don't like the possibility that one of these very highly paid athletes might get hurt playing for somebody other than them. So their major concern is their own welfare and the welfare of the NHL, and it's kind of too bad.
Bill, it's possible that a decade from now we could have the Olympics here in Boston. You know that there's this special commission looking into that possibility. Yesterday heard testimony about the pros and cons of that. Would it make money? Would it be a boondoggle? I'm wondering, and I hear so many cries of anguish from people who think, don't do this to us. The traffic is bad enough. What do you think? Would you like an Ocon? Could Boston handle it?
You know, the one thing that scares me about the proposition that the Olympics might come to Boston is that one of the people most energetic in this effort was quoted in the paper yesterday as saying, if you put politics aside, I think Russia has done a very commendable job organizing the Olympics. If you put politics aside, would there be an Olympics?
That's
I'm not sure
question.
That there would. And how you can put politics aside when discussing this current games in Sochi, I really don't understand.
Maybe we'll figure that out before in the course of the next 10 years.
Yeah. Bill Littlefield is host of NPR's Only a Game, which you can hear right here on WBUR Saturday mornings at 7 and again at 7 p.m. He joins us on Radio Boston most Wednesdays. Bill, thanks for coming in, as usual.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.